This sermon was preached on October the 6th to the Swedish congregation in Athens. It's based on the gospel reading that we had at their service, Luke chapter 7, verses 11 to 17. That's the raising of the son of the widow of Nain. Jesus is in his home territory. He's in the region of Galilee, an area where many signs and wonders occurred in the ministry of Jesus. Largely speaking, an area of great faith. St. Luke tells us that Jesus has just been in Capernaum, right on the Sea of Galilee, and there he had healed the slave of a centurion. Capernaum is the home of some of the disciples, not least St. Peter. If you visit Capernaum now, there's a very good excavation of this fishing village, showing just how miniature life must have been in those far-off days. The streets are narrow, the buildings close to each other, and the rooms of houses are small. In one such room, Jesus healed the mother-in-law of St. Peter. Public spaces are not like the lovely open piazzas and plateas that we might be accustomed to nowadays. As I say, the excavation work here is excellent, and if any of you are interested in travelling with me to the Holy Land next year, it is one of the places we will visit. Rather sadly, the Catholic Franciscans, who own the site, have built a rather monstrous spider-like church over the top of the village. From Capernaum, Jesus has travelled not a long distance away to another Galilean town called Nain. Everyday life surrounds the journeys of Jesus, and as he enters Nain, a funeral is taking place. A mother had lost her only son. This untimely death of her son, for no mother ever expects to bury one of her children, is a double blow. She is a widow. This means that she has lost the only two people that ensured her place in society. Her man, that is, her husband, and her eldest, in this case her only, son. These two males in her life were her guarantee of stability, social status, and her future livelihood. Such is this culture. And in some cultures today, this procedure will still persist. It may seem archaic to us, but still a reality for millions of women worldwide. Inevitably, a crowd is following the funeral bier. A funeral, like a wedding, was not a family matter, but a community event. We can assume that the whole village has stopped its normal activity, and they were on their way to the cemetery, which, for public health reasons, would have been set apart from where people lived and worked. Besides, we're not told which illness the man had died of. Not far from Nain was another town. It was called Shunem. This had some historic and religious significance, and maybe is the reason why St. Luke is relating to us this story set in Nain. Hundreds of years before the time of our Lord, there had lived the prophet Elisha, a highly significant character in the history of the Hebrew-speaking people. And in 2 Kings 4, verses 8 to 37, we are told of the death of the son of a Shunammite woman. The prophet Elisha raises the boy from the dead. This region, therefore, is no stranger to the phenomenon of resurrection from the dead. And St. Luke is no stranger, as a gospel writer, to what we call parallelism, namely, taking events from the past history of the Jewish people and representing them in the life and ministry of our Lord. It is part of the authentication process, authentication that Jesus is the Messiah who fulfills all the historic law and the prophets. So Jesus performs a miracle of the sort that few, if any of us, will ever witness. Someone who is dead rises again at the command of Jesus. Perhaps the best known example of this in the miraculous ministry of Jesus is the raising of his friend Lazarus. There is nothing rational about the raising of the son of the widow of Nain, and to some extent there is no point in trying to rationalise it. It's part of the account of the life of Jesus, told in four Gospels, including St. Luke's, that such phenomena happened. We are told in the second book that St. Luke wrote, namely the Acts of the Apostles, that both St. Peter and St. Paul raised dead people back to life. One example from the life of St. Paul is worth mentioning. In Acts chapter 20, verse 7 following, Paul is preaching in Troas in an upstairs room, and a young man called Tychicus is listening while he sits perched on a window ledge. We're told that Paul preaches until gone midnight, and the young man falls asleep, falls from the window ledge to the ground below, and dies. St. Paul brings him back to life again, thanks be to God. But it is a good warning to all preachers not to go on for too long. Returning to life from death is an experience that can be described by a number of people who have what is referred to as near-death experiences. Pathologically, some people have indeed died, in that all organs have completely ceased. It is their experience then of some divine encounter, often described in the language of peace or light, welcome or reassurance. For no known reason, they return to life. I suppose it's for this, the reason of rationality, that we call it a near-death experience, rather than just being described as a dead person coming back to life with no explanation for how that works. Science does not like to talk so easily about mystery or any spiritual phenomena. I was speaking to a Greek chap just the other week, for whom this near-death experience was as real as him sitting there telling me about it. This, however, by no means explains the miracles of Jesus, or for that matter, Peter or Paul raising dead people to life at their command. I have no explanation either, nor do I wish as a man of faith or as a priest to try and explain it away. It is a challenge of faith. These stories of resurrection from the dead must not be confused with the only resurrection that truly matters to all of us. The other resurrection stories we're told about may be important to varying degrees as a witness, as evidence of the power of Jesus, but they are not of the same type as the resurrection that God brought about in his crucified Messiah. It is faith in this resurrection that is the touchstone of our faith and the foundation for our hope. It is through cross and empty tomb that we find redemption, meaning and purpose, and which forms our view of life together with the saints, this side and the other side of the grave. It is into this living and endless mystery that we are baptized. It is in the sharing of the death and resurrection meal that we can proclaim together, Christ has died, Christ is risen, Christ will come again. This mystery is not a miracle in the sense of the specific raising of the son of the widow of Nain, for he would have had a natural death again in his later life. The mystery of our resurrection to new life is firmly to be found in the authentic experience of entering into the way of the cross. One thing we can share with that crowd in Nain, which St. Luke tells us. Fear seized all of them, and they glorified God.